Hello and welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. In each episode, we'll be offering insight and inspiration on a key current topic, advice on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to the managing partner at Grape, Daria Partis, to client and markets director of Deloitte UK, Ben Perkins, and to strategic marketing director at Blick Rothenberg, Sarah Donnelly, all about thought leadership. So let's get started. Thought leadership is a key pillar of B2B marketing. But what is it? What's its place in the marketing mix? What works? And how can you apply technology to it? I'm joined now by Daria Partis, who is managing partner at the London office of Grape. Daria, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for having me.
So I guess we should first of all talk a little bit about Grape. What is it?
Grape is a creative solutions agency that's based in Kyiv, Ukraine. Grape is a brand marketing agency. It's in top three agencies in Eastern and Central Europe and covers the countries of the CIS.
Okay. And we're talking about thought leadership today. So a good place to start is probably a definition of thought leadership. How do we define this?
It's a good question because many people interpret it differently. Thought leadership, I think the key to understanding it is in the word leadership. Thought leadership is a leadership practice.
Okay.
What do we do with thought leadership? We share our opinions, we share our ideas and expertise. We do this to inspire people.
Right.
Who are these people? These are our customers, our people of our organization, people that we lead, and our peers. So the main purpose of thought leadership, I think, is to establish trust. Trust to you and trust to your organization. Why do we need trust? Because trust is a central concept of reputation. If we have trust of our people, if we have trust from our customers, that means we have good reputation. Mm-hmm. And good reputation allows us to build healthy, strong working relationships with the outside world.
Because I guess that some people who are listening would be kind of saying, well, actually, if it's not about sales, maybe this isn't for me. But I guess you would argue that thought leadership is kind of part of a process and a longer process than short-term sales connections.
Yes, thought leadership is about long-term. It's about connecting with a purpose. Mm. It's about inspiring people. And it's really, first of all, it's about relationships. And, you know, you could argue that relationships precede any sale. Mm. So in order to sell something, to sell your idea, to sell your service, or to sell your products, you need to earn the trust of the people who you're trying to sell to, right? Mm. So thought leadership is long-term. It's strategic management practice.
Okay. And at Grape, you must work with lots and lots of different businesses. So you've seen how different businesses have applied thought leadership in their B2B marketing. Can you give us a bit of an understanding of that?
So in B2B marketing, I think thought leadership plays an ever so important role. We probably have to say first that, you know, thought leadership can take many forms. There is individual thought leadership, there is organizational thought leadership, there is thought leadership in B2C communications and in B2B communications. If we accept that thought leadership is about building relationships, then in B2B marketing communications, it's becoming the forefront of our practice, communications practice, because people buy from people. You know, and the better relationships we have with the people on the other side, on the side of our customers, for example, or, you know, with our peers, the healthier these relationships are and the better reputation we have in our industry. You know, in B2C communications, when we're selling our products to mass audiences, you know, there is little space for personal communication, whereas in B2B, especially if you're a big business and you're selling to public sector organizations, for example, you know, you have to establish those personal relationships first. You have to connect with people first, and then that kind of is a start of the long procurement process. And within that procurement process, you keep on sharing your expertise and you keep on enhancing those relationships. And there is thought leadership in B2B marketing.
Which is it's a great way of looking at it, because I guess if you're talking about using thought leadership to evolve your relationships with your customers, that means thought leadership will play very different roles, very different, and have very different formats as you go through that relationship build.
Yes, surely. And, you know, we shouldn't confine the idea of thought leadership just to some piece of research or a white paper or a bylined article in a trade magazine. You know, we can lead with our ideas at an industry event. We lead in our ideas with our ideas in a private meeting as well. You know, the format which our thought leadership takes will differ depending on the size of your business, depending on the maturity of your business, you know, where you are, how many people are there. So if you are just a private entrepreneur, you may not have resources, you know, to produce a white paper or, you know, a really extensive field work. Well, you can, but it's just probably not going to be, you know, a big research paper in the end. But you will be sharing your ideas and inspiring your customers in, you know, when you're meeting them, when you're going to industry events, when you're talking at a forum.
And so that's at one end of the scale. How about at the other end of the scale? I'm a big corporate business. Yeah. What sort of forms might thought leadership take there?
I think, well, again, it depends on the business. It will depend whether you are a professional services company or whether you are a company like BT that sells really complex products and services. So I think a good start, really, for me, a good thought leadership practice starts with the moment when our leaders take that digital pen and start putting their thoughts in writing on paper or on the screen of their computer. Why is it so? Why am I such a proponent of blogging? Because, first of all, research has shown that blogs are the most engaging format of consuming thought leadership. So the research that has been conducted by Coleman Parks has shown that C-suite executives, they actually consume what they call thought leadership from the blogs of their peers. Then what happens is once the blog is out there, preferably on LinkedIn, or it really depends, you know, what kind of business you are, you know, in which industry you're in. But, you know, if we're talking about BT, for example, it will probably be LinkedIn. It's a good start. So then once you have your thoughts kind of written and formulated well, then what happens next is once you receive a request for comment from a trade media, then you already have that information to share. It's readily available. It's, you know, in the open kind of public domain. You take that, you repurpose it for the trade media. And trade media is the second most popular source of thought leadership content amongst C-suite executives. So you're already kind of, you know, got those two. And then what happens next is that blogging or contributing to trade media allows you to create a really strong digital footprint. So online search is one of the main sources where C-suite executives look out for thought leadership content. So once you have the digital footprint, you're already there, you know. You have your blog on LinkedIn. Google algorithms are really helpful in, you know, promoting your name and up the search results. So you've got your blogs up there. You've got your articles in trade media. and they're readily available again. And so once you've got them on your hook, then they will probably want to connect with you on LinkedIn if they're not connected yet. They will want to, they will recognize your name in the agenda of an industry forum where they're going to go. And they will probably, if they, you know, if your thought leadership piece has resonated with them, they'll probably go and listen to you. And that's how you kind of, you're kind of there in front of them, you know, in front of their face at every touch point with your, you know, with their organization.
I know you're really passionate about the subject of thought leadership. You wrote an article in PR Space about it. Do you want to give us a bit of a summary of your argument?
Well, yes. Thank you very much for reading my article, first of all. It was my thought leadership, and as you can see, it's worked
because you're here.
Yes, you've you're an executive, you know, you're a business leader, you've searched online, you found my article, and here I am, you know, in your studio.
So this is a practical example of thought leadership working.
Yes, definitely, that's a good example. So the article was written out of my experience at British Telecom, where at that time, I was head of B2B PR. So I was looking, you know, my PR team was very lean, and I was looking for, you know, for the most affordable and most healthy way to establish thought leadership practice. And what I realized was that it cannot be a job of marketing. It cannot be the job of, you know, PR to produce thought leadership, because we are not the leaders of that organization. So I went to our leaders. We, you know, we conducted in-depth workshops where we identified where they need help in terms of reputation, and that gave them, you know, ideas on what they could be writing about or what they could be talking about. And then we started working with them. Well, I created a workshop for our executive teams where we tried to change the culture of producing thought leadership pieces within BT.
Okay.
We tried to change our approach to thought leadership and to change the ways we thought about thought leadership. And we started from blogging. And that really allowed us to make a huge breakthrough in our coverage with trade media, for example. It really helped us to build healthier relationships with analyst firms because, you know, analysts are on LinkedIn. Trade media journalists are on LinkedIn. They, you know, and if you're providing them with your insights, they will be eagerly following you. They will be eagerly consuming that content and using it.
So the two breakthroughs were the one that you got the kind of business leaders within the organization to be driving the thought leadership rather than the marketing department. And secondly, that you thought carefully by the sounds of it about your channels to market to make sure that they were using the channels where your target audience would be.
Yes, I think the main novelty of that approach was to delegate the responsibility for content development and for content delivery to our management team. Because it's them who are connected to their customers. They are in customer-facing roles. They understand their industry. It is very important to practice that if you're working, if you're operating in a complex matrix environment, because BT is a company that operates across industries and across geographies. And it is impossible for, you know, a lean PR team or marketing team to know everything, to build that really kind of formal messaging framework where everything will be, you know, set in stone, written. We couldn't be gatekeepers anymore. We had to allow our leaders to, we had to enable them to produce their insights and to share them openly. And we had to accept that that framework can be loose, actually. You know, we live in the age of social media, and this is a social era. It requires social leaders. And we were the enablers of our leaders, you know, to kind of practice this modern thought leadership, but we weren't doing it for them.
Yeah.
We were just coaching them.
Yeah. And with what result?
Well, I am proud to say that some of the people who really engaged into this practice, they've built their personal brands to an extent that they were then, you know, they started being invited to global forums, to they became public figures. Mm. They really enhanced their personal brand, and I think they capitalized their brand, which will definitely allow them to earn more in the future.
Great. And to your knowledge, BT is still adopting these processes today?
Well, some of the people that we worked with, yes, they keep on doing that.
Mm-hmm. So it has some longevity.
Yes, yes. It's a healthy practice, you know. It's a change in mindset. And once you change the mindset, then it becomes organic. It becomes inherent to that organization.
It's brilliant to speak to you. Daria Partis, Managing Partner at the London Office of GRAPE. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My next guest is Clients and Markets Director at Deloitte, Ben Perkins. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I think everyone knows what Deloitte is, but perhaps you could give us a little bit of time on the sort of things that are top of your mind at the moment.
Yeah, so I think top of my mind is really looking at how we can continue to sort of support the business around the agenda to do with transformation, to do with digital, to help our clients who are struggling with lots of the challenges that come from that, and making sure that when we're doing this, we're taking it to market in a differentiated way and an engaging way.
And within all of that, of course, we want to talk about thought leadership. So what's the place of thought leadership in Deloitte right now?
It's absolutely critical to us. We see it as the sort of the main pillar of our marketing. So we see ourselves as doing insight-led marketing. We try and build every campaign around insight. We treat it as quite a broad church, right? So insight could be research. It could be something that's quite academic. It could be something that's very analytical in terms of showcasing different analysis techniques and new takes on all problems. Or else it could just be an insight that's come from some work we've done with a different client, and we're sharing that and anonymizing that and the learnings from that with other clients. We find that in all of the client feedback surveys that we do, there's a very strong message of give us more. We want more insights.
So the way you're kind of describing it is almost like a kind of stick of rock in terms of, you know, if the whole rock is what Deloitte does, you've got insight and thought leadership kind of going all the way through it. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I think that we would completely agree with that sort of analogy. It's a great analogy. I think that we also have to be honest about why we're doing this as well. But it's not an altruistic endeavour. It's something that we feel is really important for building the brand eminence in the marketplace, showing that we understand the challenges that our clients are facing, showing that we're investing in helping them find solutions and seize the opportunities those challenges create. It's really important for building relationships with key stakeholders and individuals in terms of arming them with things that make them look smart, that make them look clever. And thirdly, it's about revenue. We don't use this overtly as a sales tool. We sometimes do some stuff that is proposition driven. But on the main, it's really about linking through to, if we are framing this as a big challenge, then of course we have services and solutions that can help that. And the best way to play those into that conversation is really through showing that we are thought leaders in the area.
So great. So you've given me those three pillars there of brand, client and revenue. What type of TL works or thought leadership works against each one of those pillars?
OK, so what I think we try and sort of, so we think of this in terms of an overarching program that might be focused on a specific topic. So it could be something around cybersecurity, or it could be about a specific sector. So say the automotive sector. And within that program, we will run campaigns that look at, some will be purely about eminence, purely about some data, some insight that resonates with the market, with the media, etc. We'll mix in with that a blend of stuff that's more overtly about business development. So things that are talking about opportunities, new approaches, new ideas. And finally, we will do some stuff that supports our proposition. So say we've come up with a fantastic tool that enables our clients to look at their sort of their real estate portfolio in a different way and understand how it's really working for them and could they find a better use for it. Well, then we'll use that tool to create some insight and use that overtly to sell the tool as well.
And how much do you kind of manage this? So do you kind of measure the impact that a piece of thought leadership has had on, say, brand eminence?
So we I think, like everyone else, we struggle to capture the impact at the top line. I think that what we are best able to capture is literally the bottom up, the line by line, the client impact. So we will often, for each of these campaigns, we will set targets at a individual client basis. So we will say, Fred Bloggs, who's CIO at company X, we don't know him as well as we like to. We would like to have a conversation with him around X. And by engaging him through this campaign that we're running is a great opportunity. So rather than a volume metrics, it's not about click-through rates or number of hits or bums on seats. It's really about the impact that we can make on key individuals at key clients.
And is it about revenue as well? I know there will be some people who are kind of thought leadership zealots who will say that actually dispatching or distributing thought leadership and sharing thought leadership with your clients isn't about revenue generation. Yeah. Is Deloitte of that view?
So I think to an extent. To an extent, yes, I would agree with that in the sense that we are not targeted around revenue and revenue generation. But back to my point at the start, we're not doing this for the fun of it, right? It's not that altruistic endeavor. This is about a commercial reality. Bull. And I know that my key business stakeholder who runs a £1 billion business within the UK, he looks at as soon as things start to look like the pipeline may be starting to get a little bit softer or whatever, his first thought is to what else can we do in the market? Mm-hmm. And usually within that thought leadership is a great place because what it gives is our people another reason to go back and talk to that client and re-engage. So we see it as a key commercial tool.
Can you make a direct link? Can you say, this piece of cybersecurity thought leadership generated this amount of revenue for us?
So the only way, so we do, we haven't cracked that nut in terms of a automated solution that we can use consistently across the business to tell us that. So what we are still working to is creating scorecards which have a mixture of kind of hard and soft metrics. We rely on anecdotal evidence that comes back. Well, it's not anecdotal, it's real evidence in other sense that my client, he loved this so much, he's bought some work off the back of it, blah, blah, blah. But I think, so if you think about a traditional way of communicating thought leadership would be to have a launch event, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I was talking to some of our consulting partners today about this, and they say, well, it's not that what you stand up and say that creates the sale, the revenue. It's having the people in, listen, engaging, talking to them about something that isn't overtly salesy or overtly driven. That's where the magic happens and that's where the sale comes from. So in terms of that attribution, absolutely critical in terms of the sale, but it isn't about selling the stuff that's written on the page or written on the website. If that makes sense.
No, it does. And I guess then when we're thinking of the process of distributing that thought leadership, I'm sure many people listening to this get inundated with people offering to sell me software and technology that will help me apply my thought leadership. Yeah. Do you believe in that from a Deloitte perspective? How do you apply technology to thought leadership marketing?
So I think, Dave, if I'm totally honest, I've yet to see the silver bullet, the magic solution that I could use. I make it a point, I see it as part of my role to meet with those people as often as I can. There are a lot, there's an awful lot of, well, and I know that you have exactly the same, well, in your day-to-day role, but there's lots of people who are coming to talk to us about things that are fantastic solutions potentially. So it's about keeping up to date with all of those solutions in the market and trying to see if one will work for us. We haven't found it yet. In terms of distribution as well, and this is quite sort of controversial, I guess, with some of the things that I'm doing at the moment, I'm holding back from distributing. So I'm not mailing out anything. I'm not sharing anything. We're sort of doing a little bit of marketing to tease, to spread some bait on the water. And then we're asking our people, both internally and our clients externally, to come to us and ask it. So come and get it.
Okay.
And then that gives us much better feedback. Mm. It gives us much more insight into where it goes and how it's used. Because I think it's just moving the mindset away from being a volume thing. This isn't B2C marketing, right? It's not a click-through or a response rate of 2% will work because there's hundreds of thousands of people involved. Mm. It's a very targeted market. So we really need to understand the impact it's having in order to continue to adapt and develop.
So almost there, the kind of prospect interaction helps shape the thought leadership.
I think that often the very best and most successful thought leadership is something that's almost done in collaboration with your clients, so kind of your target audience. So by going out, interviewing, talking to them, allowing them to review stuff, refine stuff, engaging them around that produces both a better product and it also produces a product that they feel invested in.
Ben Perkins, Clients and Markets Director at Deloitte, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My next thought leadership guest is Strategic Marketing Director at Blick Rothenberg, Sarah Donnelly. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So, Blick Rothenberg, then, how does Blick as an organisation, or indeed some of the big businesses you've worked for in the past, like Atkins, how do they apply thought leadership?
I think thought leadership has grown a lot from where it was. It came from a point of companies feeling they had to talk about different issues and they had to position their leaders as these thought leaders, these people that had the best thoughts. Mm. And getting that down on paper was enough. That's not enough anymore. It's about making sure that the content that you produce is actually useful for the salespeople in your business, which in B2B is quite often the professionals that you're working with, to actually take that content, have a conversation with their client and have a consultative conversation about the issues that client is facing around that topic. Mm. That then becomes much more of a sales conversation, although to say sales to a lot of the professionals is quite difficult because they would see it as business development or they maybe don't want to think of themselves as a salesperson. So thought leadership has to do a lot more than it used to. It can't just be about a subject and trying to take a different angle on it. It has to be about how is it going to benefit your business.
So that immediately could be seen by some of our listeners as being quite controversial, because there's also the view that, well, no, thought leadership isn't about sales at all. Thank you very much. It's about much more long-term awareness building. How do you respond to that?
Depends on the type of thought leadership. Obviously, you can do some thought leadership that's really about brand positioning, about awareness around a subject, and you can build longevity into that thought leadership and the campaign around it. Mm. I would always hope that any longer term campaign would last a minimum of 12 months and you can keep feeding into it and creating different assets. However, the reality is that if you look at particularly fee earning businesses, the time it takes, not just from marketing, but from the stakeholders to create this content, if you add up the time cost to that, for that resource, is huge. Mm. And so you would be challenged by any C-suite nowadays or any partnership nowadays looking at the return on investment for your marketing campaigns and your thought leadership to only just talk about a subject. It really is, if you're doing thought leadership that your clients are looking at and reading and listening to, it's because they have an issue in their business that they want you to help them with. Mm. So to not use that thought leadership to have those conversations that may or may not lead to a sale, wouldn't make sense for it to just sit and look pretty in a reception.
And has the way of thought, role of thought leadership kind of changed a little bit in another context, which is in B2B in 2020, emotion plays so much more of a role than perhaps it was perceived to have done before?
Absolutely. And people are bombarded with messages. We get so many messages every day. You're competing with not just your competition's messages, but with a message that might be about something totally different, that's fun and engaging. And maybe they don't want to sit and read your piece of thought leadership when they can look at a video on YouTube about something else. So in order to stay competitive in that, you do have to speak to the emotion as well as the rational thinking. And that really comes back to the point I made about if you're talking about client issues and things that are bothering them in their job, then it's really, really important to talk about it in a way that that individual understands, not just talk about it from an industry segment or from a department that they work in. Think about it from, as a CFO, this is a big issue for you. We've seen it across other companies for the CFO. How can we help you with this? And that starts to play to their emotion a lot more.
So lots of change in the way that thought leadership has been positioned, but there must be some constants as well.
Absolutely. And I think that people still like data. They still like statistics, and research still has a huge part to play. People still want to see these reports. It gives gravitas to your brand and to your thought leaders. It's right to use the new channels that are out there and the fun things. But it's also really important to rewind back to the basics. Remember, in any of this, what are you trying to say? Who are you trying to say it to? And why do they care? And what do you want that person to feel, understand, or do? And if you can remember those basics, you're going to find it a lot easier to create content that people want to consume.
Can you give us a kind of real life example from your experience of where you've had to apply thought leadership in this new world of, I guess, more sales orientated TL?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was at a company called Arcadis, we noticed that a lot of the manufacturing sector businesses were spending a lot of capital expenditure on big property projects. They, at the same time, were often outsourcing their property teams. And so they didn't necessarily have the people in-house. They didn't have to have a big team in-house like they used to, because that wasn't their core business. But they did need the right advice, and they needed some people in-house. We looked at that market. We looked at what's the size of the market, what's our right to play, what's the size of the prize potentially for us. And we went after it. And we worked as a marketing team very closely with the stakeholders to say, this is an issue we're seeing with your clients. Let's really explore it. And we did that. We came up with a campaign that benchmarked different industries, companies within that industry, and then industries against one another in industrial manufacturing, to say, this is what we're seeing happening in your industry. This is where we see you on this line. What does that mean to you? Here's some things that we've seen happen to other people. Here's what we think might happen in the coming years for you. And what does that lead to? It meant that the stakeholders were having a much more fruitful conversation and in-depth conversation with their clients around their issues around their built assets.
Right.
But it also meant that without even realising it, they were actually doing business development. They were selling because they were exploring the things that they could do to help those clients. My proudest moment was being in a room with them when they said, this is our campaign, not your campaign.
Excellent. And I've got to challenge you on results, because you've just told me how important sales are. So what was the kind of commercial result from this example?
So we made sure that we had both commercial targets and we had marketing and communications targets. The target for that campaign was 100 million euros within the first year. I obviously can't give away actual results, but the campaign
did what
it was supposed to do, and it achieved results, the right results.
Amazing. And for people who are listening in and thinking that actually a more commercially orientated approach to thought leadership is for them, how do they get started?
Don't think it's going to happen straight away. It won't. The business might not really be willing to put numbers to something straight away. I spent 3 years with some of the divisions I worked with at that particular business, putting in the plan a section that said this will achieve X targets, and it stayed X all the way through, including in the results. But we just kept doing it and we kept repeating it. And then we got to a point where we said, listen, if you attribute some of the pipeline or some of the wins you have to this campaign, it doesn't take away from you. It doesn't take away from you winning it. And we appreciate it's not just from this, but in the same way as you would say, I've had 5 meetings with this potential client over 2 years and I'm going to attribute an amount to each meeting, you're just attributing an amount to this campaign as well. And actually that got them started. And then also the other thing I would say is with that particular campaign, we actually worked with a research agency. They spoke to the clients for us and said that we would have a meeting with them after. Some of the people that we met with were new clients, so it was directly attributable. So use what's open to you. See where you are. Appreciate that the business might push back and they might push back for a very long time. That's okay. But just keep talking to them about it and seeing where you can take it with your business, and you will start to see some results.
It's brilliant to have you on the podcast. Sarah Donnelly, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's all. There's no more from this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Huge thanks to my brilliant guests, Daria Partus, Ben Perkins and Sarah Donnelly. And huge thanks to you as well for listening. I'd love to know what you've thought of today's podcast. Give us a rating or a review or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you'd love to sit on the opposite side of this table and speak to me about something interesting, practical and visionary in the B2B marketing space and share that with our listeners, I would love for you to volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast. Strictly no sales pitches, no product demos, no creds presentations, no theoretical nonsense, no ball games though. It's interesting, practical, visionary B2B marketing that we're interested in here. You might also want to join the Business Marketing Club for events, mentoring and thought leadership for the B2B marketing community. It costs just £100 to sign up for 1 year, an absolute bargain. Just think how much you spend on coffee, gym membership. You could be spending instead just £100 to really enhance your B2B marketing network and experience. Go on, what's stopping you? It's been great having you on board. My name's Dave Stevens. Thanks very much for listening.